I'd like to start this meeting with a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. And the title of this meeting is Tradition 3, The Only Requirement. And we have three speakers that I have had the pleasure to meet. I tell you that I know a lot about them, but I just met them. Ed L., from Pennsylvania, Ellen S. from North Dakota, and Jackson W. from Kentucky. So first up is Ed L.
Hello, everybody. My name is Eddie. I'm an alcoholic. And happy anniversary to PJ. Happy birthday to Alcoholics Anonymous. Happy birthday to the U.S. of A. All right, I approach this from a lot of different angles, so I'm going to do the best I can not to read, but I'm probably going to have to read here and there, right? I'm only human. My name is Eddie. I am an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Johnsonville Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Johnsonville, PA. That's in District 41, Area 59, Eastern Pennsylvania. Hi, everybody. My last drink is July 1st, 1985. And it's great to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous this weekend. It really is. By God's grace, this is my fifth international in a row. And I want to give special thanks to the International Convention Committee. I cannot imagine the undertaking this to bring this thing up. It's unbelievable. I just can't imagine it, man. And to anybody here that's involved, you know, from the volunteer standpoint, to the committee, Rick W., everybody, God bless you all, and thank you very much. All right, I've been asked to briefly share my experience, strength, and hope on the third tradition, the only requirement, and I'm very grateful for the 45 minutes that I've been given, and I got it, guys. This tradition is one of the many blessings that I can attribute to my very existence for even being able to stand here. I thank God for the experiences and growing pains that our early members suffered and endured to come up with all of our traditions. Theirs was certainly the rough work. I know this tradition to be one of inclusion, not exclusion. Should someone have a problem with alcohol to the degree that they have a desire to stop drinking? The two examples they give in their third tradition is a gentleman who claimed that he had a separate problem that might exclude him from Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were fearful of this and how would AA be affected. And the man just found his way into 12-step work and never bothered AA with his secondary problem again. The other one is where a gentleman was not spiritual in any way whatsoever, liked to damn God at AA meetings and spirituality, got drunk, and they left him alone, and he showed up at someone's house in the middle of the night where they did an awful lot of that at that time. And asked the gentleman coming down the stairs in the kitchen having a coffee, have you had your morning meditation yet? So they speak to some kind of a conversion in this man's life and that he stayed sober. Those are the two examples that they give. I'll never forget my amazement when I first came to AA. I had alienated everyone from my life and was filled with nothing but self-loathing and contempt for what I had become. Yet these people embraced me and asked me to come back. I was so afraid they would find out who I was and ask me to never come back, but that didn't happen. I guess I'm what AA refers to as a low-bottom drunk. I was homeless on many occasions, living in clothing bins, eating out of good garbage cans, and showing up at AA meetings for a warm place and free coffee and free cookie and cake for some kind of substance. But it wasn't that reason that I came to AA meetings. I came because of the love and the understanding that was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wasn't asked to leave AA. I showed up at meetings many times drunk, in detox mode, And I was absolutely whipped and humbled by booze, but I still didn't realize I chose not to believe the full gravity of just how torturous and deadly this disease was, and that I was never going to be exempt, no matter how special I thought I was. I showed up in my sobriety date is July 1st, 1985. I have a reason for bringing this up. I showed up to AA in 1972, and I've attended meetings regularly ever since, even though my last drink of my sobriety date is 1985. Most of this time was spent not drinking in AA, and I celebrated 1, 2, and 3 year anniversaries over and over again. My experience in AA in my early years is that it was very common, and this is why I bring this up, the landscape of Alcoholics Anonymous, in my area anyway. It was very common to see 10 to 15% of the room drunk, and many of them homeless. We were always welcome, me being one of them. Raw 12-step work, homework was always available right there in the rooms. I got to witness an invaluable education and amazing 12-step work by and with members at the time. I also came to realize that though I am an AA member, as long as I say I am, that I was not allowed to act in a way that was not acceptable to society, and that I could be removed from an AA meeting, but I could not be removed from Alcoholics Anonymous should I disrupt the rest of the group. Two things I witnessed over my time, I don't know if this is on one of the world's dumbest criminals. We had a speaking engagement come into the Bronx one night where I'm originally from, and that's where I got sober. Great place to get sober, Bronx, New York. But speakers came in. The guy was sober 11 months, and he was sharing about having slashed a cop's throat 13 months previously. Besides being alcoholics, there was 4 police officers sitting in the room. There was a warrant out for his arrest. They came from all sides of the room, handcuffed the guy, took him off, and he wasn't removed from Alcoholics Anonymous. He can make meetings in jail, but, the entire room applauded, quite frankly. I'm very grateful for the members of AA that were here before me, for their love and the understanding of the alcoholic. I'm grateful for the understanding that they had, and that nothing else mattered but the desire to stop drinking. It was obvious to anyone, if not by my appearance, but by my thinking, my mouth, and my actions, that I had missed the last few classes of charm school. As a matter of fact, it took me years to be able to stand on my hind legs. I used to wonder if people would finally catch on that I was not donating to the basket because I couldn't as it went around. I wondered when they were going to ask me to call for it up or leave. It never happened. As time went by, I was finally able to stand on my hind legs, become employable, and a contributing member of society. All of this goes to, listen, I'm going to drop this for a second. My experience with this is all of this goes to is that we cannot be removed from Alcoholics Anonymous as long as we say we're a member. We may be able to be removed from certain meetings for our actions. Being broke does not keep you out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never gotten a letter from General Service Office letting me know that my personal donations are not up to date and that my membership will soon be terminated. If a basket goes around at that time in 1972, I was not asked to leave if I didn't have the suggested dollar for the basket. Consequently, today, if I don't have the suggested $3 for your non-home group and the $5 for the home group, I'm still not asked to leave. I'm still asked to come back. And also, if I desire to put more money in the basket because I'm feeling a little flush that day, I cannot be thrown out of an AA meeting or AA for putting more money in the basket. And I cannot be thrown out of AA for trying to donate to General Service Office every once in a while in a personal envelope, no matter how small. There's an awful lot of stuff I'd like to say here. God knows I ain't got the time. At the end of this thing, this wasn't too long ago, a few years ago, I had a day in Alcoholics Anonymous that I felt was almost overwhelming, and a personal patch in my life. And I needed to talk to somebody really quickly in AA. I tried to get my sponsor. He was not available for normal reasons. I couldn't get a hold of other people in AA. They were not available for normal reasons. And I looked in the meeting list. There was a gay meeting 20 minutes from the time I was at. And I made that meeting in 10 minutes. And I was received with nothing but love and support. And I was able to get through the rest of the day very easily with that love and support. And it's just really good to know that there are special interest groups that understand that although there may be a special interest group, that the most important thing is that the alcoholic coming to an AA meeting or the person needing a meeting is accepted regardless of whether or not they meet the special interest criteria, and that they would never turn anybody away. So my experience with the Third Tradition has been very personal. It's been very strong, and I do believe that it's my sheer existence is because of it. Very touchy thing. I don't know whether to touch it or not, but I guess I got it a little bit. My first 6 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, having a keen observation sense, I looked at the landscape of AA to see where I could fit in and how I could straighten this place out. And I could see that there were people that were talking about, they were introducing themselves as alcoholics and a whole lot of other things. And there were people that were introducing themselves as alcoholics, and they were very quiet and content with their activity in Alcoholics Anonymous. And even though I felt that people were still trying to impose their will onto something, onto AA, which was not set up for anything else but alcohol, I thought they were the popular ones. So for 6 years in AA, I introduced myself as an alcoholic and an addict, an alcoholic and, of course, addicted. And what I did was I walked around, and here I am going against a tradition. Very simple thing. Here's an organization that loved me back to life, the only only place that would accept me. And all they're asking for is that I might try a little bit of direction and conformity. And here I am leaving my stench and marking my territory everywhere I go in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Kind of doing the same thing that I did when I was active. And this whole thing with the traditions was a real seasoning process. And it continues to be. And I don't claim to be anybody special about in AA. There's no big shots, there's no little shots, there's only one shot and we're all shot. But the fact of the matter is that the more that I try to conform to what AA is and what it is not, I end up with more peace. I'm not the maniac I was when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous trying to change everybody and everything. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being sober. I love the people in AA. I love the fact... You know, the fact that I'm standing here, oh, man, like some other people, I got this letter 5 months ago, and I had to run to the bathroom, I'll be honest with you. And then my second thought was, how the hell do you even know who I am, you know? And then the other thought was, I remember writing Rick W. or the International Committee an email about how wonderful Toronto was, but a couple of complaints that I had, I wanted to straighten them out a little bit. So it's kind of like an AA meeting, I think. I think this is what happened. It's kind of like an AA meeting. You don't like the coffee, here's the key, you know? So if you want to get up here, start complaining about it. Oh, my God. But anyway, I don't know. I lost my place in this thing, so I'm not going to go over all of this. But anyway, and I think my 45 minutes is up. This is a great experience. It really is. I love AA. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love these internationals. And like I say, this has been an experience for me, a seasoning process. And I want to thank you all for the opportunity to share. May God continue to bless Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope you all enjoy the weekend.
Thank you, Ed. Next we have Ellen S. from North Dakota.
Good afternoon. My name is Helen, and I am an alcoholic. Soy Elena, y soy alcohólica. Sober today by the grace of God and the miracle of AA. My home group is the West Fargo Monday night group at 8 o'clock. If you're in West Fargo, North Dakota, you're very welcome. At the Faith Lutheran Church, we have a big, big book and a topic study. My sobriety date is June 19th, 01. The longest time I've... Thank you. The longest time that I've been sober in my adult life. And to let you know... any previous participation I'd had through many treatments was court ordered and really didn't include a real desire to quit drinking. But the hand of AA was there for me. When I got out of a treatment center and I'd begun working at a Holiday Inn, there was a group of AA members who used to come in. And one of the regular customers where I worked asked me what meeting I attended. I said, I don't go. And when I did used to go, it used to be in really big speaker meetings. And I'd sit in the back and I'd hide out. And then I came up with some excuses. Well, I'd lost my driver's license, didn't have a car, and didn't have to go on. This guy said, I'll pick you up. Oh, then I was in the soup. So he took me to my first AA meeting out of treatment. And I was just coming down from 2 years of an abuse. And my back was up against the wall because it wasn't going to be renewed. And so I had been beaten into a state of reasonableness and had finally learned I couldn't do it on my own. All my good ideas had been used up. And so Roy picked me up. And the next week, before I could come up with more excuses, he picked me up again. And again and again. That was 7 years ago. And I'm standing here today because he said, after we went to Seattle in 2006, he said, if you can stay sober long enough, I'll take you to San Antonio. And here we are. So I kept going to this biker meeting in West Fargo, North Dakota. And after about 4 weeks, I started opening my mouth and talking and getting to know the people and letting people get to know me. And we were blessed in that group with long-term sobriety and quality sobriety. So after a while, I looked around the table and to a man, I could say, I want what you have. How do I do that? And they showed me how to do that. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. And before this, there was really no real desire to quit drinking because I was the queen of relapse. I was planning my first drink on the way back from the treatment center most of the time. And so I was off an abuse. I was in AA. Step one says, sober by the grace of God. I had some willingness to follow directions. I had to accept as fact that I was an alcoholic, and I had lost the ability to control my drinking. The delusion that I was like others was smashed. I wasn't the special little snowflake who could do it on her own. And in this meeting, I found a fellowship of like-minded people, and I wanted what they had. So the third tradition for me began in that West Fargo meeting, learning the traditions. We have a big book study. But the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to quit drinking. And I had part of that. Because I wanted to quit and I wanted to stay quit. The short form is the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. The long form goes like this. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. We had people in our group that came from the local bar to the meeting, sat in the chair and pissed their pants. And some of the members were outraged and said they should be taken out of the meeting right away. But people were reminded of Tradition 3. These people wanted to quit drinking, they were there every week, and they had a desire to stay sober. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. The people let me into their meeting because I had a desire to quit drinking. They didn't care that I wasn't a real redhead. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that they, as a group, have no other affiliation. And the third step comes after the first step for a reason. The first tradition states, each member of AA is but a small part of the great whole, which lays the foundation for unity. And fellowship in AA gave me a place to go. It gave me a place to belong. It gave me a place where I felt welcome. and it had been a long time since that had happened. My sponsor says to people that alcoholics are the only people who treat loneliness by isolation. And I quit going to the bars years ago, and single and living alone and afraid to relapse again. Fellowship in AA gave me a place to dialogue and a place to witness to other people what recovery looked like. And that's kind of scary, but anyway. And it gave me a place to practice not drinking. It gave me a sense of belonging and purpose for the first time in a long time. And the purpose was to carry the message to alcoholics who still suffer. And my sponsor took me to treatment centers and volunteered me to speak on panels to people who are in treatment. And knowing that I love a microphone and a free lunch, I was happy to go. And so, how do we do this? Chapter 2 states that we have found a way out on which we can absolutely agree. And so we do this by asking newcomers, do you want to stop drinking? I get requests for people who want a sponsor, a female sponsor. And I ask them, do you want to stop drinking? That's a heavy question. My personal history was, when you asked me that question, I wouldn't tell you the truth. When you know how an alcoholic's lying, when his or her mouth is moving. I was so arrogant and full of self that I thought I could do it on my own. Because my grandmother had started taking people to treatment at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota back in the 30s. But that doesn't mean we have any knowledge of it ourselves. I'd been through interventions and through my step-parents' relapse. It had no impact on my disease. I didn't want to drink anymore. AA provides a place to belong as a member of the great whole. I am a small part. The group that I went to didn't care where I was from or what I did. And I realized and learned from them that I can't do it on my own and I can't stay sober on my own. And so I was reading the 12 by 12. And it occurs to me from the stories there that AA lets anyone in. And last year I worked at a treatment center for single mothers who were chemically dependent. And dual diagnosis, maybe, you know, meth addicts or cocaine and alcoholic. As long as they had a desire to quit drinking, they were welcome in West Fargo or any other AA group. For me, tradition three includes the principle of inclusiveness. Everybody is welcome. And I work in the hospitality business, and that's very important to me, making people feel welcome. I feel a responsibility to carry the message. I am my brother's keeper. And people in the program were very careful and kind to me and considerate, watching me go through the first 18 months while the fog cleared. AA help is freely given. I've been richly rewarded in sobriety through the associations that I've made, from the people that I encounter to the miracles that I witness. I hope that the hand of AA continues to be there for the alcoholic who still suffers like I was when I first came to AA. And I am a very grateful member. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Helen. And our final speaker is Jackson from Kentucky.
Thank you, PJ. And a warm, warm greeting during my regular nap time from Kentucky. My name is Jack, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 7, 1988. Any folks here from West Virginia, that's 22 years. actually, that's not true, and it's not fair, because my dad told me as a young boy that when the settlement started moving west from Virginia, West Virginia, into Kentucky, there was a huge and enormous sign right at the border that said, "Cane Tuck, dark and bloody ground, vicious bears, wolves, rattlesnakes, copperheads, American natives who don't want to give up their land. Turn back, don't come into Cane Tuck." And my dad told me that the ones that could read turned back, and those of us who couldn't came on. So, congratulations to West Virginia. This teaser. My home group is the Off Clay's Mill Men's Group, and that, while it may seem to be on the surface a violation of a tradition, it's really not, because we've invited women and they will not darken our door. But they would be welcome if they would come. So, I'm going to try to tell a little bit about my evolution into acceptance of the third tradition. I had started in 1984 when my oldest son hauled me out to a mental hospital after about a week of binging on drugs and alcohol. And there I stayed 3 days, and I learned two very, very important things that I'll pass on to you now. One was always, always overstate your coat or dress size, because they size those little backdoor gowns in a way that will reveal about 8 inches of your posterior. So if you're a medium, say large, and if your dress size is 4, say 10. The other thing is, they told me this, and I had a degree in chemistry, so I understood every bit of it, but they explained in one lecture that there are little cells in the brain that lie right at where the nerve cell, the synapses, come together, and that those cells secrete endorphins, endotropins, all of these things they named, and that if you drink too much vodka for too long, those little cells will say, "Hey, we don't need to do this anymore. He's getting it somewhere else. Let's just quit." And they quit, and if you keep drinking, the little cells will atrophy and finally won't secrete any of the good feeling stuff, and you'll have to continue to get that from vodka. Now, I don't hold that out as an accurate restatement of what they obviously truly said, but that's what I heard. And the gentleman who presented that compared that to the fish eyes in mammoth cave fishes that live far, far, far below the surface of the earth, way down there where there is no light, and that because they don't need those eyes, they atrophy, and they have no eyes. Just a rudimentary spot. And that made a big impression on me. And so when I got out of there after 3 days, I called my ex-wife to tell her that I had jumped ship, that I was leaving there, I was out, and didn't need to stay any longer. And she asked, "What did they say about your drinking?" And I explained to her as best I could, knowing she wouldn't really understand it, mammoth cave fish eyes. And so I said, "I am not drinking anymore because I want those little cells to continue to secrete those good feeling things." Then she asked me a key question. "What did they say about AA?" I said, "Oh, my goodness. They took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I feel so sorry for those people. They were chain smoking with one hand. drinking coffee with the other, and talking about God. So what are you going to do about that? I said, well, I plan to send them a donation. Little did I know how big that donation was going to be for the next 4 years after I left that hospital prematurely and against medical advice. So then 4 years later, I went off to... I had no idea what an alcoholic was. My dad was alcoholic by his own admission. He quit on his own and never went to AA as far as I could determine. Never mentioned AA. So I went 4 more years and finally ended up in a treatment center, a residential treatment center where they kept me for 28, 30 days. And what I learned there was, I'm cross-addicted. Now, I like that. I thought that sounded much better than I'm an alcoholic. And it kind of implied that I really didn't have anything to do with that, and that it couldn't be a moral problem, that it had to be strictly chemically induced. So I came back to Lexington after spending 30 days up there. My sponsor then took me to meetings and introduced me around to his friends. And I would introduce myself. They'd ask anybody here for his or her very first AA meeting. And, of course, until you make all of the first ones, I want to do that. So I would raise my hand. I'm Jack. I'm cross-addicted. And I got just about the same look that I got from the jail. That was it. But I liked that. That sounded better to me than alcoholic. Finally, a kindly gentleman took me off to the side and he said, I hear you saying that you're cross-addicted. What is that? I said, well, I had a pretty bad drug habit and I drank too much. And as I understand it, I had the allergy. The phenomenon of craving, no question. But I also did these other drugs. So I've got both those things operating. And they taught me up there that that's cross-addicted. Well, he said, that's real good. But he said, I think that you'll probably get a lot more help here. Are you alcoholic? I said, yes, sir. Yeah, I am. Well, he said, I think you'll get a lot more help here if you'll start introducing yourself as an alcoholic only, and let the other deal take care of itself. Reluctantly, because I really didn't like the sound alcoholic. You know, I didn't like that much, but I began to introduce myself that way. So, here, from a guy who was cross-addicted, then I focused on generally what was wrong in your meetings. I hate to confess this malady, but I'm also a lawyer. Now, when I go to the prison, I tell them I'm a lawyer, and they boo. And then I point out to them that this may be the only good lawyer you've ever seen, else you wouldn't be here. So I don't know if any of you have been to jail. Maybe this is a good exposure for you. But I thought, first of all, we need to control. A lot of the topics just didn't suit me. And so I thought somebody needs to step in here and dictate the topics. I could do that if they wanted me to. We needed a time limit on sharing. I invoked that on one of our members one time, saying, you know, we're limited to 3 minutes. And you've got your 3 minutes. Irritated him pretty much, but when he chaired the next month, he brought in an egg timer, turned it on 3 minutes, and I was the first trapped. So I thought, we'll have to quit. I wanted to close on time. I had important stuff to do, and if somebody was sharing some heart-rending story, you know, when the time, our hand hit straight up, we needed to quit. Way too much profanity. I wanted to get that out of there. That could be a requirement for membership. We needed to monitor the meetings for insurance compliance with the traditions, for goodness sake, even though my home group's a men's meeting. Comments on what people were saying, side talk, we call it, cross talk. Didn't want any of those, and I thought we ought to have that, and I would argue with my sponsor, Stan, about these things. He would, what do you mean we can't put somebody out of these meetings? He had actually read the third tradition. I hadn't. Actually, the reason I wanted some rules is that's what I do, tell you how to get around the rules or break the rules and get you out of it. Or tell you there's no such rule. So I missed that. The other was, I didn't want you guys saying you were addicts, like my friend just mentioned. And yet, that was my cross addiction. So, all of those things finally took their places, and I'm pretty content just to wait till after the meeting and criticize everything that happened instead of trying to put rules down. Now, I want to read you something that my friend Paula found in our literature, where Lois was describing the activities that occurred at what became known as the 3,220 words in his time. And Helen did about 2,800, but they talk faster than I do, so I get more time. Rule 62. Lois was describing the meetings and the comings and goings at the 24th Street Clubhouse, one of the first in 1940. And she says this: there were men from every rung of the social ladder who never conceivably would have drunk together, never would have gone to the same bars, yet here they were in one room helping each other to stay sober. In a sense, and here's the only requirement, in a sense they were all members of an exclusive club, and only they understood what they had to pay to get there. So I want to express my gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous, who took a guy who announced that he was cross-addicted and loved me into believing that the only requirement for membership is and should be a desire to stop drinking. And I thank you for the gift of sobriety.
I would like to thank all of our speakers, and one thing that I was remiss in doing, and I know that I have some members of my home group here, is I didn't say that I am from the Cottonwood Big Book in Richardson, Texas, so sorry for that. I got a little choked up. I consider myself Jane Wayne, and I don't have that emotion very often, and I didn't know what to do with it. At this point in time, we're going to take just a few minutes, and if you have questions for our panel, there is a microphone over right over here, kind of in the middle of the room, and if you would like to go to the microphone and pose a question, please feel free. If you'll please go to the microphone.
Hi, everybody. My name's Handsome Bill, not Bald Bill. My sobriety date, because I need to tell you this, is the 22 May, 1977. And I wanted to comment about the fact that I found out that the words honest and sincere were taken out of the requirements for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got involved in a controversy in my home group about children. And I wrote the General Service Office in New York, and what you get is our experience suggests. And the group conscience did not like that, and they voted not to allow children under any circumstances at the meeting, so we went and started another group, of course. So as the argument was over whether the children had a desire to stop drinking, that was what they said. My feeling was that the ladies that were bringing their children, if they wanted to stay sober eventually, would get babysitters and take care of the problem, and that I should be patient and tolerant with them. Well, what happened was I started digging into the third tradition, and I wondered where the words honest and sincere disappeared. And I thought it was something very, very profound. And what I found out from the General Service Office in New York was when Bill was writing the 12 and 12 in 1952, he just left them out. And if that wasn't God working, I don't know what. Because when I went to my first AA meeting, I wasn't an alcoholic. I just had a juice. I was a juice freak because that's what the druggies called alcoholics at the time. It was a week before I became an alcoholic. I kept coming back to AA because of all the good-looking women. So I did not have an honest desire to stop drinking. I don't even know that I had a desire to stop drinking. But that was 33 years ago, and I thank God that my home group was patient and tolerant enough with me to put up with me. And I want to thank you all for being here. This is my very favorite tradition. My home group is the Bring Your Own Big Book and 12 and 12 group and at the Serenity Club in Port Huron, Michigan, 10 o'clock Saturday morning. Everybody's welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Jerry. I'm an alcoholic. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I was a cocaine addict, and at the treatment center they asked me, did I drink? And I said, of course I drink. Everyone drinks, stupid. And I also smoke cigarettes. But one of the things I wanted to say is, number one is 2020. Detroit 2020 will be the convention in 10 years. And we will be having everyone there who wants to attend. We won't be keeping anyone away. So if you want more of this 10 years from now, please come to Detroit and see us. And don't believe that you won't be welcomed with open arms. Also, I want to say that in our home group, which is the Early Bird Group in Grosse Pointe Farms, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit, we had an occasion to have to call the police twice. One was a person who had a knife and was wielding it, and the other one was a person who was involved in some kind of an awful physical condition, which I won't describe, but it was dangerous to the welfare of the rest of the group. And so we never put any of those people out. We called the proper authorities, whether it was be the EMS or, you know, the police department, and they take care of that business. That's their business. That's not AA's business. So I'm glad to be here. I'm really glad that we had a tradition today. You know, the longer I'm in the program, the more I'm involved in traditions and giving leads on traditions and being asked to do that by different groups around the area of Detroit where I come from. And the traditions are very important. And someday I'm hoping to actually become a student of the 12 concepts. Wouldn't that be something? Thanks.
Thank you.
My name's Ross. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Ballarat group that's near Melbourne in Australia. My sobriety date's the 14th of April, 1974. Thank you. And I did stop drinking on the 10th of July, 73. I haven't had a drink since then, but I tried the marijuana maintenance program for a while. So I did say that I was an alcoholic and an addict until I got to the Superdome in New Orleans in 1980. And then I changed and I realized that I'd just say that I'm an alcoholic when I'm in AA. And I do go to the other fellowship and have since it started in Melbourne on the 21st of August 1976. And when I'm there, I just say I'm an addict there. So I've been thinking about this tradition for a long time because my life depends upon it. And I'm just blown away by the brilliance of Bill W. and Dr. Bob and the others, that they made this a subjective definition of alcoholism. I have conceded to my innermost self in my room at midnight what I am, and that is the only definition that I need or have. And the alternative would be to have a urine sample at the door or a DNA definition of alcoholism, and I don't know whether anybody's yet come up with a perfect, predictive, objective test for alcoholism. So I am disturbed lately by people saying that they are real alcoholics. Because I feel when they say they're a real alcoholic, they're disenfranchising me because I'm plainly an unreal alcoholic. And I don't even like it when people say they're high-bottom alcoholics or low-bottom snobs, which the grapevine called people who boast about their low bottoms. So I find a lot of this is a bit ridiculous, and I hope that people will think twice about it when they say that they're a real alcoholic. I know it's in the big book, and there's also potential alcoholic in the big book. And there's also quite a few others in Silkworth's bit. And that's not AA, but that's Silkworth. I admire Silkworth, but that's Silkworth. And he talks about the manic depressive. I wish he had written that book about the alcoholic. So all these categories and all these hierarchies, I think, and the worst thing that can be done, I think, is to be judgmental and hint that someone isn't a real alcoholic. Because if that works in their brain and they want to go away from AA, it could kill them. Thanks for listening.
My name is Sean. I'm an alcoholic. I can ask questions to you guys, right?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
Please do.
My sobriety date is December 6, 1999. My home group is Hermiston AA in Hermiston, Oregon. My question is about people that might admit they're not alcoholic that want to be members of Alcoholics Anonymous and how we might approach them, if you guys have any experience with that. And just to qualify this a little bit, my sister was going to meetings and would tell me often that she didn't feel she was an alcoholic but really enjoyed the fellowship. It was great for her and wanted to be a member of AA, and it was really hard for me to tell her I don't think that that really works. I've also had a sponsor whose wife, same situation, admitted she was an alcoholic but wanted to be a member. And it seems to me that as AA grows, people like AA, we're a likable group when we're sober for some reason, that maybe this might become a little bit more prevalent in our society. Thanks.
Who wants to answer that?
Yeah, I just want to be clear as to what the question was, and it is what I thought. We had a gentleman in the Poconos where I live. I didn't get to know him very well. I came a few years before he died, but a lot of other people did. And there was a situation where he's quite the traditionalist and really guided a lot of people. Gentleman entered the room. It was common at the meeting for them to ask, is there anybody here that doesn't have a desire to stop drinking? And this guy raised his hand. And they asked, do you have a drinking problem? And he said, no. Well, we're going to have to ask you to leave. And the guy said, well, I don't want to leave. So he said, do you have a desire to stop drinking? He said, no. So he said, do you have a drinking problem? And are you an alcoholic? No. Do you have a drinking problem? No. And I guess what I'm getting at is they went down every road possible to try to include the man in the meeting, give him every opportunity to stay. And he passed the test of not staying. So they asked him to leave, and they had to make sure that he left. I joke around with people sometimes. I can't imagine why a person would want to, and this doesn't go to your sister, I can't imagine why a person would want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if they don't have a drinking problem. There should be another program for that, you know. I would feel like I was confessing to crimes that I didn't commit, you know. And there was one other thing. I'm so tired. There was one other thing, and I can't think of it. But sorry. Open meetings. There you go. Very good. You should be here. Yeah. Hey, your sister can attend open meetings. Yeah. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Next.
I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Boca Men's Group. And my name is Sandy.
Hi, Freddie.
I always state that I'm an alcoholic first because that's the thing I have to remember the most. I've done a little reading about the third tradition. I like to read Language of the Heart, sort of a chronological history of AA in Bill Wilson's own words. And before I even get to the third tradition, he talks about earlier on, I think in like 1945, 1946, they took everybody, all the groups that were available, there weren't very many groups, and they had them send in all the requirements for membership in their groups. And Bill Wilson describes it. He says, well, there were many responses. It covered two tables, and we read every one of them. And quite frankly, if we adopted all those rules, nobody would be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason being, and then he said, and the people who were the most, the ones who would violate the rules the most, were the old-timers. You know, the guys who came in early on with Bill Wilson. And the reason they wouldn't qualify is because they drank, or they didn't read the big book, or they didn't have good morals. Could you imagine that, an AA meeting with people that didn't have good morals? It's kind of hard for me. Later on, Bill writes in Language of the Heart about the third tradition. And I've gotten into some arguments with people about this, but I don't really argue that much anymore. I really don't care. But he states in the letter in the third tradition in Language of the Heart that there are no musts in AA. That the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. You don't have to put any money in the basket. You don't have to admit to anything. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to say your name if you don't want to. So a lot of times when I'm sitting in a meeting and somebody doesn't say their name and they scream out, what's your name? I'm sitting there going, he doesn't have to say this. This is an anonymous program. And I think it's important for all of us to remember that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. We have three people left in line, and so we're going to allow them to comment or ask questions, and then after that, we're going to close the meeting. Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm Margie. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Margie.
My sobriety date is December 18th, 1985. And I'm from the Live and Let Live group in Kerrville, Texas, just down the road. This is something I've struggled with a little bit throughout the past, well, up to about 22 years sober. I used to introduce myself as an alcoholic and an addict. Early in my sobriety, I sometimes felt hurt because I got criticized for doing that. And I really needed a place to belong. And I sometimes wondered, did I belong? Or did y'all really want me because I was cross-addicted? Or did you only want part of me? Or, you know, being so insecure and feeling so rejected anyway. Yeah, I really struggled with it. But I needed the program badly enough that I wouldn't let you reject me if that's what you wanted to do. And I go to this fellowship and another fellowship. And over the years, finally, and mostly folks just out of courtesy, I introduce myself as an alcoholic in AA, an addict in the other program. Simple courtesy. I owe so much to these fellowships, I want to be courteous. Now, where I run into a little difficulty is in telling my story or sharing in any depth. It has been suggested in another meeting I was in this convention that you should tell your alcohol story in AA and your addict story in another fellowship. That's sort of like untangling a ball of twine that's really tangled together. So what I ask people in my meetings that I attend is to understand I will try to do that, but to be tolerant of me when I can't do that perfectly. Because I don't want to offend anyone, but I know that my sharing is used by my higher power to help people. and I'm not going to not share. And I don't think it's necessary for me to not share. I'm not perfect, though. I'm a human being. I make mistakes. I don't do it perfectly. Do you think, and this is a question for the panel, do you think it's unreasonable for those of us who are struggling with that kind of problem to ask for some tolerance and human compassion as we do struggle with that, as if we're willing to also give courtesy and respect to the traditions? When I make a mistake, it's because I'm simply human. I'm just another alcoholic. I'm doing the best I can. And I think it is so important, especially with newcomers, that we let them know they are welcome with all their problems, all their anguish, their feeling of being unwanted, and their pain. And I respect the traditions, but I would rather have someone come into AA and introduce themselves as an alcoholic and an addict and be welcomed and spoken to gently about that than be made to feel that they don't belong. And I will never, ever change that. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I do have a response for that, and I was hoping I wouldn't have to whip this out. All right, this is something I printed off. It's from the World Service Board of Trustees. It's called Bulletin 13. And it's an article that was sent out to the membership in 1985, and it was revised again, sent out to the membership in 95 and 96. And I hope this lady, this woman can hear this. The focus of AA is on the alcoholic. And we ought to respect that fellowship's perfect right to adhere to its own traditions and protect its focus. If we cannot use language consistent with that, we ought not go to their meetings and undermine that atmosphere. Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you.
I'm Ann, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ann.
Sobriety date, January 5th, 1975. I'm very, very grateful for the third tradition. When I went to AA, I kept being told I wasn't a real alcoholic, that they spilled more than I ever drank, which was probably true. But I definitely had the desire to stop drinking. And thank goodness they had me read the traditions over and over, probably because I could say autonomous and anonymity. And so, so after reading it probably 15 or 20 times, I got that third tradition that I didn't have to have drank as much as they drank, that all I had to have was a desire to stop drinking. Thank you.
John M., South Orange, Sunday night, 7:15 meeting in the state of New Jersey, South Orange. All right, sober date is April 25th, 1989. All right. Now, I heard everybody talking about, you know, the drug addict, this, that, and the other thing. I was the alcoholic that came in, and I would come to meetings, and I would hear the alcoholic addict, and they'd go, yeah, I drank, and then all of a sudden I got a 25-minute dope addict story. You know, I didn't hear the steps, didn't hear the traditions, didn't hear any of that stuff. That drove me crazy. Now, what you just read, I want a copy of that. I got 1,000 of those guys in AA. They're glorified dope addicts, but they're in AA. I think Ray O'Keefe said it, you know, the Anders. You know, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm lower than you, the alcoholic, because I did drugs, too. I don't want to hear that crap. That's the way I am. I'm a bona fide drunk. And AA has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I got the government. I got people chasing me. You know, I got no job. I got this, but hey, I still got a life. You can't beat it, you know. But the thing that I like, that this is what I go by. I try to keep things as simple as pie. Okay? I'm in AA. AA has given us, we, a hell of a new life. Why can't people just give it its respect? Respect it deserves. That's all we ask. Give us respect. I go to NA meetings. I give those dope addicts plenty of respect. You know, I don't sit there and babble on about my dope addicts or my drunk stuff. I tell my alcohol, my drug stuff. But anyway, it's good to be in San Antonio. And I want a copy of that. I want a copy of that. I'm going to stick it right you know where. I want a copy of that. Thank you.